That's fascinating. I never. Yeah, that would be interesting. I have to research. I don't know. Interesting. Okay.
And that's our table. We were going through the dynasty of King David, and Frank had the phone there, and everything we wanted to make.
It's all there. It's all there. Everything's there. It's all there. It's, yeah.
Biblical evening.
Okay, good stuff. It's nice. Okay, well, good morning, good morning. So now, what we're going to do is today, we're going to continue. Because last week we did the spiritual meaning of the war with Midian. Now we're moving on in the Chumash. And the next chapter is chapter 32, right? Perek Lamed Beis in Chumash Bamidbar, which is still in Parshas Matos. This is the last chapter of Parshas Matos. Then we start the last parsha. But this concept, this is a very interesting story, actually. I know we know about it, but when we look into the psukim, we get the depth of it. It's actually quite a fascinating story. And just in a... I know. So I'm okay, just a cold. It's no fever. It's just a cold. So, yeah. I took my temperature, no fever. So anyway, as I said, it's just a cold. So anyways, so... But I woke up feeling... I was feeling fine yesterday. Anyways, so it's a very interesting story. This, and actually, interestingly enough, quite relevant to nowadays in many ways, because we are talking about settling the land of Israel, and that's what this is about. And this is just, as we know, we're just when the Jewish people are about to go into the land of Israel, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is going to pass away soon. And here they are in what nowadays is known as Jordan. We call it the Trans-Jordan. It actually, I mean, I know it's not politically correct to say, it is not Israel, but while I say that it's not Israel, but it still will be Israel when Mashiach will come. We have the belief that when the Jewish people went into the land, they conquered the seven nations, right? Mainly the Canaanites, but there were seven nations in the land of Canaan. And there were three nations that are called in the Torah the Keni, the Knizi, and the Kadmaini, which we don't know exactly what those nations are, but they will be conquered in the time of Mashiach. And this area that we're going to be discussing today is that area. So that area, what we're saying is, it's before they enter the land of Israel. And this is the famous part where the two tribes, specifically the tribe of Reuven and the tribe of Gad, as we'll see how it introduces the story, they had a tremendous amount of cattle, and they had just conquered this land. The entire Jewish people had just miraculously conquered this land. And something important to remember is that they weren't even necessarily going to conquer the land. The reason they conquered the land was because we know with Sichai and Oig, the king didn't give them permission to come through the land, you remember? And that was why we had no choice. If not, we could have lived peacefully, but they didn't take the peace. So therefore, miraculously, we conquered the land. And when the tribes of Reuven and the tribe of Gad saw that this land is such an amazingly fertile land, good for grazing cattle, they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, and we're going to read the psukim now, can we settle in this land? Now, we'll see the reaction of Moshe, but just let's put it a bit in context before we look into the psukim. Let's understand the Jewish people have just spent 40 years wandering in the desert. Why?
So this other generation to God.
Yeah. That's right, but it's because of the spies, exactly right. They were supposed to go in long ago. They were supposed to go in 40 years ago, right? That's what was supposed to happen. Leave Egypt, receive the Torah, and enter the land of Israel. But we know what happened. The spies came back with this negative report, and the Jewish people were afraid. And as a punishment, 40 days of spying corresponds each day to a year. They were wandering through the desert, and that generation couldn't go into the land of Israel. Now, here we are, 40 years of wandering in the desert, right? 40 years of incredible delay. We're talking about not just an ordinary delay, you know, when you're traveling and you have a little delay and you get nice and frustrated. Here we're talking 40 years delay to get to the destination. And they're about to get to the destination. And we have these two tribes Reuven and God. And what do? They say to Moshe Rabbeinu, can we stay here, not go into the land of Israel? It's the strangest thing. It's so difficult to understand. It's not just strange. It's like, how dare they almost? And who would want that? The cattle, huh? That's it. Okay, so let's put that's in context. Let's see. That'll help us a little bit understand Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction. And I want to look into some of the psukim. I know if you look at your map for 1 minute, you can just get an idea. It's going to go through all the different nations. So there's two maps here on your page. So I just want to show you just quickly so you can see. On one side it says Eretz Yisrael proper. You see that it says that? And then there's the Jordan River. And there's the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, the Sea of the Galilee, right? As we know, that's in the north. But on the other side is these countries, is this part. You see where it says God, Reuven, and on top it says Menashe. We'll talk about Menashe after. They inherited that land. It's quite a big area of land. It is now the Jordan. That's what it is, Jordan. The country of Jordan is that area mostly. Could be Menashe borders already into Syria. It could be. But it's mainly Jordan. Okay, that's what it is now. Okay, so you can see what happens over here. They are going to be crossing the Jordan River. That's what's supposed to happen. That's what they will be doing with Yehoshua. And these tribes want to stay here. Okay, let's go to the first page of your Chumash. On the next map, you can see it here. You see where it's the Mediterranean. And there you can see how all of the tribes are in Eretz Yisrael, except for these three tribes of Reuven, God, and Menashe, right? So interesting, Menashe, you see Menashe? Menashe is in half. Half of them are in Israel, and half are across the Jordan. Do you see that? That tribe was divided. And we're going to see in the story that Menashe is a very strange part of the story, because the tribes that approach Moshe is not Menashe. He doesn't seem to play a role at all. And this is a very big question, how he lands up there. Okay, we want to know that soon. Okay, let's look into the psukim and let's see. Let's first read the psukim and then we'll see. Okay, so the psukim starts. It's, as we say, Perek Lamed Beis, chapter 32. And the first two words already tell us, as you see, Riva, Mikne Rav. Umikne Rav, Haya Livnei Reuven, Vilivnei God. What is Mikne Rav? Lots of cattle, exactly right. Ooh, somebody's pet just walked through. I don't know, there's a dog in there. I don't know if Levicle's there or not. Anyway, whatever. All right. Anyways, a lot of cattle. I guess somebody's there with it, I guess. Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Okay. All right. So a lot of cattle were belonged to Reuven and God, and it describes not only was it a lot of cattle, otsumaid, very great. And some people say that it's interesting that the cattle were the cattle of God. God was known as a very, very brave and militarily strong tribe, right? But it says even the cattle were strong. It says that the cattle of the tribe of God weren't even afraid of animals like bears and other things, and they would take them on. Okay, anyways, Vayiru es Eretz Yazer, and they saw this land of Yazer, as we say, this is the Transjordan. Ves Eretz Gilad, Vihine Hamakim, Mekai Mikne, and it was a place for livestock. So before we even go further, if you look at the word umikne rav haya levnei Reuven, a lot of cattle belong to the tribe of Reuven, compared, which you would know, but if you would go open up a Chumash Bereishis, who else had a lot of cattle? Who's the first one described with a lot of cattle? I don't know if you remember. One of the great tzaddikim. Avram Avinu, actually. Yeah, Avram, he had a lot of cattle. Remember it says that was part of the thing when light and the whole thing, and they divided, right? But over there, it actually, interestingly, it says, in that pasuk, it says, the Avraham kaved ma'id b'mikne. And Avraham was very heavily laden with cattle. What's the difference? What does it say here? U'mikne rav haya levnei Reuven. Do you see the difference over there? It says, Avraham haya Avraham kaved ma'id. So which word comes first by Avraham? Avram, right? And then it talks about his cattle. Here, what does it say first? Here it says the cattle first. And then it says who the cattle belong to. So already we can understand that what was the top priority of these tribes? It was their materialistic wealth, right? This is what they were priding themselves in. This was their whole focus. And in a sense, as we will see as the story unfolds, I mean, this is one perspective, obviously, we're going to have to see deeper. But obviously, what's motivating them to want to stay outside of the land of Israel? It's their cattle. So the cattle is the top priority. Okay, interesting. You laugh when you look at it that way. But let's not laugh because we don't, you know, our lives are not so different in many times as we know. Okay, let's see. Okay, so let's see what happens. So Vayaviu bnei Gadu bnei Reuven. Another interesting difference here. Look at this pasuk. Pasuk Aleph said, "Who had a lot of cattle? Reuven and Gad." Do you see that in the first pasuk we read in pasuk Aleph? Now, what does it say? Vayavayu, who comes? Bnei Gad ubnei Reuven. Do you see the change of order?
Yes.
It's interesting. In the first pasuk, it tells us Reuven first, and then God. And here, it's other way around. And what's happening in this pasuk? This pasuk is where Bnei God and Bnei Reuven are coming to approach Moshe. Vayomru el Moshe, they say to Moshe and the El Elazar HaKayin, the El Nesiei Ha'eda Leimer. So they come presenting their case to all of the leaders of the time. And what do they say? They say, Atarais V'divan, these are all names of the places. They give the names of all the different land of the cities. V'yazar v'nimra v'cheshban v'el ole usvam unevay uv'ayin ha'aretz asher hika Hashem. Very exact language they use. The land that Hashem smote. In other words, who conquered it? Hashem. He says, lifnei adas Yisrael, before the congregation of the Jewish people. What about this land? Eretz miknehi. It is a land for livestock. Ula avadecha mikne, and we have a lot of livestock, right? That's how they're presenting their case. But why, in the first pasuk, it tells us who had most, well, those two tribes, but it mentions Reuven first, then God. But when it talks about who comes to Moshe, it first mentions God first. Why do you think that might be the case? Why would it mention Reuven first? Why does that make sense?
Maybe God approached them.
Okay, so why does it say Reuven first in the first pasuk? Why does it even mention Reuven first at all?
Because
he's the eldest. Exactly. He's the Bechar. He's the eldest. So out of respect, we mention Reuven first. Especially when we're talking about inheritance, right? So it makes sense in that context to mention Reuven first. But whose idea is this whole thing? It's God's idea. This whole thing is God's idea. Okay, and why is it, do I say that so strongly? Because, again, putting into context, besides the fact that they're approaching with a request to inherit a piece of land outside of the land of Israel, if you think about what that means, they inevitably will be separated from the rest of the Jewish people, right? In the land of Israel, we know already the beautiful bracha Hashem gives, that it's a land that has Hashem's protection, right? We say it's the safest place. It has Hashem's protection. Mireishis Hashana, right? Hashem's eye is upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So now to remain out of the land of Israel, what are they doing, in a sense? Well, they're safeguarding their wealth, but at what expense, Sylvia?
Well, she thinks that they're disconnecting from Israel.
Well, they could be disconnecting and also maybe even putting themselves in danger. I mean, you're talking about remaining out of the country, so to speak, that will be defined as your country. And you are going to be alone, 10 tribes on one side, only 2 on the other side. In other words, you're really at the mercy of all the countries surrounding you. You obviously have obviously somebody who's willing to do that has an incredible sense of inner pride and security that they're strong enough, right? That's what, obviously. And who had that? God. Remember, what was God's bracha? We say it, and some people say it at night before they go to sleep. When Yaakov gave God his bracha, he said, God gidud yugudenu, for who yagud akev, which meant that God is the army troops. He's going to be the one that leads the army. He was very militarily very, very strong. He was. And he felt that he was fine, no problem. I'll be able to protect my family and my flocks and my cattle, no problem at all. So God was the one who really, really wanted this. And he's the one that led Reuven to come and approach Moshe Rabbeinu. But just before we go further, just a fascinating thing I heard just this morning. What might be Reuven's logic? Why might Reuven want to stay out of the land of Israel? If you think about it for a moment. So we said before, who was Reuven? He was the firstborn, originally. But is he still considered the firstborn? No, not anymore. Okay, so he was taken over by Yehuda, who was going to, the kings were going to come eventually from Yehuda. Not only that, but even Yosef was more of a firstborn than Reuven, because Yosef already, his family already was divided in two, right? Menashe and Ephraim, which means he's getting a double portion. The double portion is supposed to go to the Bechar, right? The Bechar is supposed to get the double portion. So Yosef is more of a Bechar than Reuven, and Yehuda is definitely more of a Bechar, because he's going to be the kings of the royalty. So Reuven, in a way, feels a bit left out. And for Reuven, it's a little bit better not to be embarrassed, not to be ashamed, not to stand out as, I am just another ordinary tribe in the land of Israel. Rather, I'll have my part somewhere else. So it's an interesting motivation from Reuven's point of view. But there's another beautiful thing it says like this. If you remember how they camped, remember they camped three tribes all around, you know, in the desert, right? So the camp of Reuven, it was Degel Machane Reuven, that's what it was called. Who camped with him? It was Reuven, it was Shimon, and it was God. Okay, those were the three. Now, Shimon is not part of this. Shimon goes into the land of Israel. But if you think about it for a moment, what happened to Reuven in the desert? Do you remember? There's a few bad stories in the desert. Well, one of the biggest bad stories in the desert, what was that? Korach. Do you remember what happened with Korach? So Korach led a whole rebellion. And you remember that Korach... Exactly right. He was ready to take Moshe's place. And he was also very wealthy. It says, Reich wie Korach, right? So he was very wealthy, Korach, as well. Also driven by his greed. But you remember, it says that who was influenced by Korach? Which tribe? Reuven. Do you remember? Dasan and Aviram was from Reuven. Because they dwelled nearby. Do you remember? They were right. They were neighbors. And another set of neighbors that weren't good for Reuven was Shimon. Because that's the story of just now, with Pinchas, right? Shimon was the one that led, you remember that was the whole thing of Zimri, was from Shimon. So Reuven, in his mind, made a cheshbon and he said, you know, I'm very influenced by my neighbors. It would be much better for me if I don't go into the land of Israel. Why? Because maybe I will be lumped again next to Shimon. And Shimon is no great shakes. I would like to separate from Shimon. So that could have also been a motivation for Reuven to remain outside. Interesting. It's interesting all the different things that could have been going through their mind. However, according to the simple meaning of the psukim, it is the cattle. They had a lot of cattle. And this was amazing grazing land. Sorry, just one more quick thing. Yes.
That's worrying me. What did they graze in the desert? All this cattle.
It's a good question. Miraculously. I don't know if they ate mutton, but I don't think so. It's a good question. They would have to buy. So there were a little bit, there was the, you know, the... Not grass, exactly. Well, there was the Be'er of Miriam, and things did grow with it. Yes, so obviously they had... And maybe they bought... Don't forget that when they left Egypt and they went through the Yam Suf, they got very wealthy. because at the Yam Suf, remember, all the Egyptians' wealth was thrown out and they collected it. And it says, actually, it does say that as they were traveling through the desert, there were merchants who would come from all the countries around. They, when there's business, people hear about it. And they would buy and sell. They would trade. So it could be that they bought food, fodder, for the... Yeah, fascinating. It's an interesting question, though. Interesting. And you know, Sylvia, you just reminded me of something else, a fascinating thing. Another way to look in a good light on Reuven. The interesting question is why is it that we say Reuven and Gad had a lot of cattle, right? Which means that they had more than the rest of the Shvatim. Why? Why did these two Shvatim have more than the rest? Well, based on two things we've just said. What did we say about Gad? That he was
wealthy.
Yeah, he was wealthy, but even before wealthy, he was very strong. So it could be because he was so strong, and you remember now they just went through these wars with Ammon and Moab and Edom. It could be that he got a lot of the loot, a lot of the booty, right? Because his soldiers were very, very strong. So it could be he got more booty. That's one way.
The last tribe to collect everything that was laid
behind. Oh, done. That was done. Yeah. But another interesting thing, I saw such a beautiful thing that it says that maybe Reuven and Gad, this is fascinating, actually loved the mon. And we'll see, we'll discuss this later when we get to the more meaning part, a deeper part of this. What does that mean, they loved the mon? They loved the mon more than the other tribes. Now, what does that mean? As they're traveling through the desert, we know many times they had lots of complaints about the mun. It's too boring, it's the same food over and over again. Anybody who would have felt that the mun was boring, what would they have had to do? They would have to shecht some of the cattle that they had, right? And have some meat for dinner that night. Yes, obviously. Now, Reuven and Gad loved the mun, so they didn't kill their cattle. So they had more cattle. You see? It's an interesting thing. It shows you something. We'll see soon. It actually has a deeper meaning as far as they're staying where they were. But a fascinating thing. So it's a positive, actually. It's interesting. So it's just different ways of understanding what's happening here. So let's see what happens. So let's come back into the story. Okay. So there they are. They want this. They're presenting it to Moshe. And what do they say in Pasuk Hey? Vayayimru. If we found favor in your eyes, yutan es haaretz hazayis la'avadecha la'achuza, let this land be given to your servants as a heritage. In other words, we should inherit this land. Al tavarnu es hayardein, al tavirenu, do not bring us across the Yardin. Wow. Quite a scary thing to think somebody could think that, but okay, just at the entrance, okay. Anyways, how does Moshe react? Look at Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction. Moshe is devastated and angry and absolutely shocked. You can see it's unbelievable. Vayomer Moshe livnei God v'livnei Reuven. Ha'acheichem yavayu la'milchama va'atem teishvu pai. Your brothers are going to go to war and you're going to sit here? Could you imagine what he's saying to them? It's unbelievable. It's quite a strong, like, whoa. In other words, one thing you see right away, such an incredible thing, before we talk about the holiness of the land, the preciousness, the gift, the wanting, the unity, everything, just the thought that you are ready to desert your brothers, that they should have to fight, and you should, at the same time that they're fighting, sit peacefully here. Is that a possibility? Do you even think that? How could you even entertain such a thought? It's unbelievable pasuk, you see? Fascinating thing. Actually, it's a pasuk that we have to take to heart always. We can't always fight the battle, right? We're not on the front lines, but we're not exempt. We have to fight it in whichever way we can. We cannot have that the brothers are going to war and you're just sitting here like as if nothing's happening. It doesn't work that way. It's not, just not. That's not what a Jew does. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu says. He's like, it's like, what's going on? And then Moshe says, not only that, but you know what you're going to do? Vilama, siniyun eslev b'nei Yisrael. Why will you, and they translate dissuade, which means actually melt, make afraid the hearts of the Jewish people. May avar el haaretz, from crossing over into the land. Asher nasal lahem Hashem, that Hashem is giving them. In other words, what is the message to the other people? If you say you want to settle here, what might they think? You're afraid. Why don't you want to go into the land? You're not interested in the fight. You don't want to fight the wars. You want to stay here. You're secure. Hashem already made all the beautiful miracles, as he did with these wars. You have a lot of cattle. It'll be wonderful. You can live wonderful lives. Why, how dare, Moshe Rabbeinu, how dare you do that? How dare you make the Jewish people afraid? And they should have to go into the land and fight. So then he goes on and he says, and Moshe even goes further. It's not enough. Kai asu aviseichem. This is what your fathers did. Bishalchei aysam mikadesh barnea lirais es haaretz. When I sent them from Kadesh Barnea, which is where he sent the Meraglim from, the spies, right, to see the land. Vayalu, and you know what happened? They went up at Nachal Eshkol, as we know. Vayiru es haaretz, and they saw the land. Vayaniu eslev bnei Yisrael. And they melted, they literally petrified the hearts of the Jewish people. Levilti vayel haaretz asher nasal lahem Hashem. Not to go into the land that Hashem has given them. You know, it's the second time that Moshe Rabbeinu uses those words. Asher nasal lahem Hashem. Do you see this? It's a very interesting words. It's not that Hashem will give them. It's fascinating. Do you see it? This is also for us. This is a land that Hashem gives us. He's constantly giving it to us. This is not a land that we should think we have to conquer in the future. We have to look at it. Yes, we have to go to war. That's what Hashem wants. But whose land is it? It's our land. Hashem already gave it to us, right? It's our land given to us by Hashem. That's the attitude we have to have. But yeah, Hashem wants us to fight. That's in the, we don't have a choice. Fascinating thing. Okay, I want to just see if there's any Rashi here. Look on the bottom. He says, Zion. He says, why do you dissuade, right? Lama siniyun, tasiru v'samniyu liban. Why do you remove and hold back their hearts? They aver from crossing. Sheyiyu sivurim, for they will be under the impression, shatem yureyim lavar, that you are afraid to cross. Why? Mipnei ha-mochama, because of the war. The chayzek ha'arim v'ha'am, and the strength of the town and the people. Okay? So, why do you think you dare do that? So Moshe was not impressed. And it's important to keep that in mind. I just want to show you, because the story, how it unfolds, is a little bit different to most of these type of stories. Usually, if Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset, what does that mean? That the request is wrong, right? It's not a right request. And therefore, what should happen? The request should be denied. Obviously. They should do tshuva. They should change course, right? In some of the stories, people were punished. Some of the stories, people just did tshuva. But not anything else. But this story is different, as we know, because we all know that they did remain there. So how does this work? Okay, let's understand, especially with such a reaction. So if you go to the next page 395. Moshe's not finished. He's laying it on thick. He says, you know what? Hashem was so angry at that time, at that day. And he promised, Im yiru ha'noshim ha'olim b'mitzrayim mi'ben esrim shana v'mayla eis ha'adama asher nishbati l'avram l'yitzchak u'l'yakov ki lo milu acharai. He says, right, this is what Hashem said when the spies came back. If these men who came up from Egypt from the age of 20 years and above will see the ground that I swore to Avram, to Yitzchak, and to Yaakov, for they have not followed me fully. Except, we know who did go in, Bilti Kalev ben Yefuna, Haknizi, V'Yahishua ben Nun. Why? Why are they exceptions? Ki milu acharei Hashem, right? Because they followed Hashem fully. One important, interesting thing in these words that Moshe is saying, he's laying it really thick. I mean, they all know the story. This is just their fathers, right? These people, it's their fathers that died. That's who died in the desert. Not a way back generation. Their fathers. And the last ones just died a few months ago. So this is something that's very real to them. And yet, you know what's amazing? You see Moshe Rabbeinu, how he says, the land that was promised to Avraham, to Yitzchak and to Yaakov. He's laying it on thick. In other words, it's almost like you're rejecting the most magnificent, beautiful treasure that Hashem promised to your great-grandfathers, right? And you want to stay over here. It's like, Moshe Rabbeinu is like, oh, what are you even on about? It's like, he's in shock. And he says, only ones who are different, it's Kalev and Yeshua. And Moshe Rabbeinu describes Vayichar Af Hashem again. See, double, again. And Hashem got angry, as he says, Yisrael, Vayaniyin, Bamidbar, and he led them, like he made them wander around in the desert, Arba'im Shana, for 40 years, Atayim Kol Adar, until that entire generation was finished, like in other words, they all died, Ha'isa Hara, Be'enei Hashem. What does he call them? They are the ones who did something so negative, so evil, in the eyes of Hashem. And now he says, "Kamtem tachas aveseichem, you have risen up in place of your fathers, tarbus anoshim chataim, a society of sinful people." Look what he calls them. It's like you're a rabble, you're a group of sinful people. The spice oid al charein af Hashem el Yisrael, to add more to the burning wrath of Hashem against Israel. My gosh, Moshe is not impressed, as we can see. He says he will again let it rest, as we say, after you. He's going to leave you again in the desert. And what will you cause? You will cause a destruction to this entire nation. Oh my gosh, this is like a reaction, like, whoa. Moshe, as we know, even though he wasn't Aaron, but he was still Moshe, and he loved his people, to talk so harshly to them, and so thick, like he's laying it on really thick, and so harshly, and with such a, you know, as you can see the emotion coming through, and it's like, how could you even think of it? How dare you? And what's going on? But then what happens? So you would imagine, if you got such a reaction, I would run 50 million miles, right? Bury my head in shame. Sorry, sorry, sorry for even thinking, contemplating such an idea. But what happens next? Look what happens. Vayikshu eila vayaymru. Look what they say. They approached him and said, Gidrais tzayin nivne lemikneinu. We will build enclosures for our flocks here. The Arim, and first, interesting again to see the water. They're going to build enclosures for their flocks. And then what are they going to build? The Arim and cities, Litapenu, for our children. And then what are we going to do? No, don't get so angry, Moshe. It's not like you say. We're not going to make the people afraid, because what are we going to do? V'anachnu nechaleit chushim lefnei b'nei Yisrael. We will arm ourselves swiftly before the Jewish people. Ad asher im havi einim el mekaimam, until we will have brought them to their place. V'yoshav tapenu, and our children will dwell. We'll see in a minute what their plan is. B'arei ha-miftzar, in these fortified cities, in the face of the inhabitants of the land. And I'll read one more passage and then we'll explain what they're saying. We will not return to our homes. Ad hisnachel b'nei Yisrael ishnachel asay, until every single Jew inherits, right? And like the land is actually given to each and every single one of the Jewish people. So what is he saying over here? What are they saying to Moshe? They're not backtracking. No. They're just explaining what they meant.
Negotiating.
Yes, negotiating. But it's interesting, because Moshe accused them that the main accusation was that you're going to make the rest of the people afraid, right? And that was what the Meraglim did. So they said, no, we're not going to do that, God. We weren't even thinking that. That wasn't even our thought. What we're going to do is, we are just going to make sure that our wives and children and our cattle are okay. But then we're going to leave them, and actually for 14 years, because 7 years to conquer the land, 7 years to divide the land, and only then will we return home and settle here where we want to be. Such an interesting proposition. In other words, nobody has anything to be afraid. We'll lead the war. We won't be, God forbid, shirking our responsibility. How could you have anything against that, right? What could be wrong with that? But just to analyze something very fascinating, let's go back. I want to show you something, because they said, look what Rashi tells us. What did they say? They said, we're going to build in Pasuk Tezayin 16, right? We're going to build enclosures for the flock, and then we're going to build cities for our children, right? Yes. Very interesting. What are they what are they doing first?
Protecting the cattle.
And then the children come after, come second. Let's see, Rashi says. Fascinating thing. So Rashi says, Nivne l'meknenu pai. He says, Chosim hayu al mamainam. They were more worried and more careful and concerned for their property. Yaiser mi bneihem ubneisehem. More than their sons and their daughters. Shekdimu mekneihem letapam. Because they put mention of their livestock ahead of their children. Amar lehem Maisha. So Maisha says, Lekein, this is not right. And that's what we'll see in a minute when Moshe answers them. He says, Aswa, Iker, make sure that you keep your priorities right. Make sure, he says, first, as we say, so what's essential, essential, and what is secondary, secondary, right? Tuffle, tuffle. Bnu lachem tchila arim l'tapchem. First build cities for your children. Va'achar kein, and afterwards, g'deres l'tzaynchem, enclosures for your cattle, right? So let's not, the Moshe says, put them right afterwards straight. But, something quite incredible here. This proposal that they set forth changes Moshe's entire tone of voice. And we're going to see in a minute what happens. But I just want to see if there's any more Rashi. Oh, look what Rashi says. He says, "Vanachnu nechelat chushim." We will. He says, "We shall arm ourselves swiftly." As he says, swiftly. That's something very important. Like in other words, we're not going to dwaddle. We're not going to stay here. We're not going to separate. And we're also going to keep our morale and the morale of the people in and the strength. Like we are strong, you know, which we are. God was a very strong tribe, and we're going to lead them in battle. Don't worry. Okay. Then he says an interesting thing. Lifnei b'nei Yisrael. He says, B'roshei. It's interesting. B'roshei, guys, says. What they will do is at the head of the invading armies. Mitaych she'gibayrim hayu. They made this offer because they were the mighty. That's what it says. Because it says about God, something fascinating. It describes that when God would go to war, v'taraf zraya afkatkeid, he would tear off arm as well as head. It says that he was able to kill the enemy soldiers, the arm and the head at the same time. They had the method, they knew how to take the sword and in one thing, chop off the head and the arm in one go. In other words, the enemy would be petrified of God. And therefore God said, don't worry, not only will we join the army, but we will lead the army. We will be in the front, which is quite an incredible Mesiras Nefesh of the tribe of God. If you think about it, the Mesiras Nefesh is unbelievable because they are willing to go into the land of Israel and to fight for the Jewish people, even though they're not getting any benefit from it. You realize they're not inheriting that land. That land is not for them. They say, no, we don't want that land. We want this land. This land has already been fought. This land has already been conquered. So they're willing to go and put their lives in danger and leave their families and their cattle all in order to help the Jewish people. It's unbelievable, Mesiras Nefesh, actually. It's an interesting thing. And that's what it says. Also, fascinating thing that happens, a very beautiful thing. It says that what happened with God and Reuven, so they also offered something more than what Moshe hinted to. Because initially, right, when Moshe Rabbeinu was upset, what did he say? He said, you're going to make the Jewish people afraid, right? You're going to stay here, and they're going to think the reason you're not going in is because you're afraid. So therefore, what could they have offered? That they would join the Jewish people while they're going to war, right? Do they have to also be there while they're dividing the land? Is that a necessity? Did Moshe even hint to that? No. So they're offering even more than what Moshe even expected. So that's also a very, very powerful thing. Okay, now let's go back now, Taka, and see how does Moshe react to this negotiation. Okay. So, now in Pasuk Chaf. Vayomer Aleha Moshe. So now Moshe changes tone. All of a sudden, everything's changed. And what does he say to them? Im tasunes hadavar hazeh, if you do this thing, which thing? Im techletzu lefnei Hashem lamelchama tzar techoltzu. If you arm yourselves before Hashem for the battle, va'avar lachem kol cholutz es hayarden lefnei Hashem. And every armed man from among you shall cross over the Jordan, right? Before Hashem. Ad hayrishayes ayvav mipanav, until he drives out his enemies before him. And Taka conquered the land before Hashem. The Achar Tashuv v'yisem nikiyim Hashem umi Yisrael. Then he says, that's okay. Then you shall be vindicated from Hashem and from the Jewish people. This land that you want, you can have it then. If you're willing to do that, you can have this land. Something else, I don't know if you noted, when Bnei Gad and Reuven were talking, very interesting thing. They said to Moshe Rabbeinu that we will fight the war, right? We will go armed, we will go in front, we will fight. But what's missing there, it's actually interesting, and I'll show you, it says, V'anachnu necholei tchushim lefnei b'nei Yisrael, until we, you know, we'll go armed in front of them, until we brought them to their place. They don't mention something that Moshe mentions a lot of time. I don't know if you see. You see, what does Moshe Rabbeinu say here? It seems extra. Extra words when he's responding to them. And he repeats it a few times over. Which word? Two words. Two words repeated over and over and over. Lifnei Hashem. Do you see? Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu says. They didn't use the word Hashem in their fighting. We will go. We'll fight. We're strong, right? We'll fight. We'll be there. We'll go to the front of the army. Don't worry. We'll make sure that we'll protect the Jewish people. What does Moshe Rabbeinu tell them? It's true. You're strong. 100%. And we need you. It's true. And you're going to give the Jewish people a sense of security. But don't forget something very important. Who's really fighting this war? Hashem is fighting this war. The Jewish people's wars are not natural wars. They're miraculous wars, all of them. And if without Hashem, there's no success. So fascinating how Moshe Rabbeinu says it over and over and over again, this concept of Lifnei Hashem. Because one of the very fascinating things that we see, it talks about Mikne Rav, we have a lot of cattle. So actually the Kli Yakar goes quite at length and he says something interesting. He says, this shows us something about these people. That unfortunately or fortunately, it's just human nature. What happens sometimes when people are very wealthy, and actually most of the time, wealth gives a certain sense of superiority. It just naturally does. And which leads to an arrogance. It's a natural thing. It's something that people have to work on in order for them not, you know, to remember to keep that in check. What naturally happens if somebody has a lot of wealth at their disposal is that they feel quite an expansive sense of control. You know, I can do a lot with my money. I can, you know, I can. I'm rich and I'm, it leads, we know, more arrogance. Not always a bad thing, because sometimes it makes that person, the wealthy person, in a certain sense, if they use it the right way, let's say, if they want to use it for something good, right, so they can do something good and not be affected by what other people say. So it's a positive, but many times it leads to something negative. Exactly right. Exactly right. And this is what Moshe was saying to them. A large part of why you want to settle out here is because of your arrogance. Because your arrogance comes from your wealth. And he says something else very interesting. He says, you know, if you look at the word nechassim, nechassim is a word for amassing, not wealth really, but nechassim is like belongings. But it's also like when somebody has a lot of nechassim, it means they're quite wealthy. In Hebrew, the word is nun chaf samach yud mem. And he says, it actually comes from the word nichnas, which means that Hashem takes from one and gives to another. Because we have to remember that what we have is because Hashem gave it to us, right? Now, the question is, why did we have to say that Hashem takes from one and gives to another? Hashem doesn't have to take from one to give to another. He can give us without taking from somebody else, right? Hashem can make us wealthy without taking it from somebody else. Even though you see in life, one person gets rich, one person gets poor, the next day, well, you know, it goes up and down, right, as we know. We say galgal, like there's a wheel in the world, right? It goes up and down, right, as we know. Today this person's wealthy, who knows what tomorrow brings, right? We know. But nevertheless, the question is, why do we have to say that Hashem takes from one and gives to another? So the Kli Yoker says something very powerful. He says, Hashem dafka does that. Why? Because Hashem wants the wealthy person to remember that what I have, Hashem gave me. And you know what? Yesterday, somebody else had it. And today, he doesn't. What will that do for me? That will make me, at least a little bit, keep my arrogance in tow. That who knows, maybe tomorrow I won't have it anymore. It's all from Hashem. And who knows how long it's going to last. That's the idea. The idea is for us to remember that it's all transient, it's temporary. And we have no idea how long this success will last. So this is a very important thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to tell them, it's all very nice and good, and yeah, use it the right way, but just remember where it comes from. Remember who gave it to you. And therefore, that will help you use it properly. Okay, but one beautiful thing that already, even before you go further, you do see in this story, is that even though we've painted them a little bit negatively, Reuven and Gad, that they're very materialistic, that they care about their cattle, and in a way they even care about the cattle more than their children, in a way. But nevertheless, what we see is something so incredible. They are willing, if you notice, to leave their families and to go into the land of Israel and to fight a war that will not benefit them, that they don't gain anything from, for the sake of their brothers. So these are not bad people in any sense of the word, right? These are very great people. These are incredible people. And the truth is, that's what we are as a Jewish nation. We are, we really are. We are a beautiful people, and we do care about each other. Sometimes it takes a bit of layers to uncover it, but it's, you know. But Moshe really shocked them, in a sense, and it brought out the best in them. And the truth is, who says that wasn't their intention to begin with? Maybe it was. Okay, materialistic, yeah, it's true. But does that mean that they're bad people? No. But obviously we do have to understand what their real motivation is. And that's what we're going to do next week. But before we go, just one more small thing. I heard just a few beautiful ideas, like their motivation, so to speak. Next week we'll take it even a little bit deeper. But we said one thing about their being worried about being influenced. Also, interesting thing, it says that Bnei Reuven and Gad, they were very, very concerned about, they were very honest. They had a lot of cattle. Here there's a very big expanse of land. And they felt that if they had this big expanse of land, then their cattle can graze and will not graze on somebody else's land. So that was another interesting motivation that perhaps also made them want to. Another cute thing I saw, it says, it's like from certain Hasidic Rebbe, it says, Miknerav. So let's not translate it as a lot of cattle. Let's translate, it's obviously very out of context. Miknerav means Rav is the Rav, like a rabbi, like their Rebbe. Mikne Rav, they want to acquire their Rav. What does that mean? Where will Moshe Rabbeinu be buried? We know. On that side of the Jordan, right? That's where he's not going into the land of Israel. They wanted to stay with Moshe. They had such a deep connection to their leader. And they said, we want to stay here and be close to our Rav. So that's one way they explain it. Also, it's a very sweet idea. And although some of the Chassidic Rebbe say something interesting, they say, but it was still a mistake, because really what you're meant to do is you're meant to take from your Rebbe, and then you're supposed to grow. So you're supposed to be able to move on, in a sense, and you don't have to stay outside of the land of Israel. But still, it was coming from a good place of that deep connection to Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's another beautiful one. The other one, I'm just trying to think if there was any other one of these. No, okay, so now, what I want to show you is, I'll just read one or two more psukim, and next week we're going to see a little more to understand. Just, we have to still understand that the story is a bit strange. Because even though it's true that they come with this whole proposition that they're going to lead the war, but nevertheless, the way Moshe Rabbeinu reacted initially with such anger, right? And like, it wasn't anger, it was like hurt. He was so hurt. He was so worried about them. And to be able to backtrack right away just because they say they're going to fight for the Jewish people, right? Doesn't Moshe care about them also? In other words, it sounds like he was initially upset because they're not going into the land of Israel, which is bad for them spiritually. How come Moshe is so quick and to agree to their proposition? So we have to understand a little bit deeper what's their real motivation to stay in those lands. And the other big question that we didn't answer is, where does Menashe come in? Where's Menashe is not there at all. How does he land up there? We have to understand.
Exactly. So Menashe's there, but he's not even asked.
He doesn't ask anything. So I'll just tell you something very interesting. Moshe puts Menashe there. Oh my gosh, this is the strangest part of the story. He says to half of Menashe, he says, you know what? You guys are joining Reuven and Gad. Could you imagine? Poor Menashe, he doesn't even ask. He doesn't want. But Moshe assigns them that half of the tribe of Menashe is staying with Reuven and Gad.
That's like...
Exactly. Some people say to keep them in check because they do love Eretz Yisrael. They want to go in. How do we know Menashe loves Eretz Yisrael? This is the one we know most. Because who comes from Menashe? The Benos Slavchad. The daughters of Tzlafchat, the tribe of Menashe, those women who wanted the portion in the land of Israel. The women, right? They were Benos Slav. They're from Menashe. Menashe is a tribe that has an exceptional love of the land of Israel. So in a sense, you could imagine how hard it was for the half of the tribe to stay out of land. It's unbelievable. We'll talk about it next week.
So Menashe instructed them to do that, to keep an eye on God and
Reuven. Menashe. Exactly.
They had to do it.
It's quite a powerful thing. We'll see next week, Mirtz Hashem. We'll continue next week, because we have to understand this back, you know, what happens, what's the real motivation of these two tribes, and therefore why Moshe agrees, and what's Menashe's story. So we'll see.
So was that the beginning of Kiruv?
Yeah. Maybe. That's an interesting one. Kiruv, she says.
To keep people out of the land. Rather than making the land.
Ay. Okay.
So I want to ask.
Sure.
The land of Egypt was in the chus of the woman.
100%. Going into Israel is in the chus of the woman.
This one will be because of the woman
again. 100%. No question about it. We have to keep the faith, Riva. We have to be, despite how difficult it is and all the things that are fighting against us, we have to. Yeah. That's what it says. The women have to be the strong. That's what I remember. And that was from the tribe of Menashe. Yes. Exactly. That's right. Okay, you can unmute yourselves. That's it. That's right. It was always going through the sons, and then they wanted the girls. Because have a wonderful week, everybody, and we'll see you next week in Mirtz Hashem.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Take it easy.
Yes, I will not. Just a cold.
Lots of Jewish penicillin.
Yeah.
She can
sit. Yeah. Some lemon. It was.
The vault is over.
That's it.
It's a swing.